with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing, and it's his cussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Hey, look it, we're live. Isn't that cool? This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our happy little cozy hillbilly home. You can also get the stream, however, by going to places like the TuneIn Radio app. If you purchase the Pro or whatever version, you can also record the show, which comes in terribly, terribly, terribly handy. Other possibilities? Well, there's Stitcher Radio. There is the Tuner Internet app for iPhone. And, of course, you can always go over to iTunes and download the podcast. The podcasting home address is available for you at WhiteRoseSociety.org under the subdomain for this program. WhiteRoseSociety.org. We are live, as noted. We are live from Washington, D.C., in the headquarters of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign up here on Capitol Hill. Got a little surprise when we pulled in last night. I wish I'd been on the air last night. Honest to Pete, I do. Unfortunately, moving this bunch 15 feet, let alone 350 miles, is a lot like moving the children of Israel across Sinai. Slow sledding, to say the least. But we're here, and we are working. We have work to do, meetings tomorrow, trying to do some strategic planning for who we talk to when we talk to them. There's only so many hours in a day and so many folks you can approach. But you guys have been doing a wonderful job of contacting your member of Congress. I've had notes from several of you. I'm not going to name you all because there are too many. But you're doing the hard work that will eventually lead to passage of the AIC Act. And we're convinced of that. This is not a few. I don't do futile gestures. We're working on this. We're putting the miles on vehicles and hides and the time in because this is really the only chance to end mountaintop removal. There's only this. You know, I was communicating with my colleague Bo Webb. My friend, my neighbor. And do you realize that even though fracking is an environmental disaster, there's no bill in Congress to stop fracking. There's really no bill in Congress to stop the Keystone XL pipeline. The only bill we have in Congress that would stop any oppressive conduct directed at citizens being sacrificed for corporate profits is the AIC Act. It says a lot, doesn't it? It says that we have a chance here to lead. A chance to light the way toward a better future for oppressed peoples everywhere. Of course, you can learn about all of what's going on by going to acheact.org, acheact.org. And when you do that, it's still a work in progress, as it were. But there's a lot to learn there. There's science that you can digest. You can read the bill that was introduced last Congress. It's not going to change any when it's introduced in this one. You can read the bios of, if you, and I'm not counting myself in this list, but there are a lot of heavy hitters involved in this. A lot of people who have been, poured a lot of time and energy into the effort to end mountaintop removal and have done a lot of fundraising good for a lot of big greens are on the list of the AIC team. Go there and learn. Go there and help. It is about 7 minutes past the hour, and I hope everything's sounding okay. I hope that there's not just a, well, I need to get into the chat room, among other things. Well, I'll be diddled. It says here, I'm ascending. Time out. Oh, okay. Thank you, Sparky. I was about to have a conniption there for a minute. I got an email from Randy saying classical music on the horn, Glockenspiel music on the White Rose Society stream. But no, we're coming through, right? Okay. And let me do this real quick. I should be in the chat room already. Going that way as quickly as I may. Okay. Just popping into the chat room there so that I can ask silly questions like, is this thing on? And get a meaningful answer. We'll get rolling into the meat of the program here momentarily. But I wanted to point out a couple of things, share a couple of things with you. Had a note from our buddy Dr. Allen. You know, Dr. Allen down in Texas. He's got a couple of announcements. He says, greetings, Bob. One, I donated $50 and would like to offer a challenge. If somebody else will kick in 50, and by somebody else we mean any combination, 10 at 5, 5 at 10, 2 at 25, you know. If someone else will kick in 50, I'll put in another 50, and that way we'll have the evening taken care of. That would be great because we do try to raise $150 an evening just to keep all of this going. There are, well, let's see, what did Robert Frost say, miles to go before I sleep? And well, we've got bills to pay before we sleep. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. Every penny, every dollar helps so very much. And thank you all. And thank you to Dr. Allen for this kind offer. He's basically offered to not double your money, but triple it. Two, he says, I have an action announcement, if you have an opportunity to mention it. And we do. And the action is this. The Waco Friends of Peace will stage a protest of U.S. drone killings on Saturday, the second day of February, from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the corner of Waco Drive and Valley Mills Drive in Waco, Texas. You know what? If I was anywhere near there, I'd be there. But we do have listeners in Central Texas. And Dr. Allen says, it's possible other folks in Central Texas will hear this and join us. And if you do hear it, I hope you will join Dr. Allen. One, it is good to maintain, no, it's past good, it's patriotic, to maintain a standing objection to extrajudicial killings. You know, that's something we used to farm out to things like, remember Ronnie Raygun? Yeah, this is the kind of thing that we used to farm out to things like Salvadoran death squads and Adolfo Calero's, Adolfo Calero's Contra army in Nicaragua. We used to farm the work out, but we've gone cheap and we've decided that we'll just do it ourselves. Disgusting. So, in Waco, Texas, on Saturday, the second day of February, there will be a protest of extrajudicial drone killings perpetrated in the name of and with the funding of we, the people of the United States of America. And the more numbers that can show up, the better. And it's an extra incentive. It's a chance for members of the Horn family to get together and meet each other. We may not all ever get to all meet each other, but every time a couple of Horn family members get together, we add links to this very human chain that we've been building over the years. So, Saturday, February the 2nd, 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. at the corner of Waco Drive, Valley Mills Drive, in Waco, Texas. A group of patriotic, concerned, and decent American citizens standing up against grim mechanized death that falls from the air. Dr. Allen adds, point three, I've been driving a Chevy Volt for about 2 years. I purchased one when they were first released. If you'd like to hear about it, I could call in some night, and we would. We would all like to hear about your experience, Dr. Allen. We had the call the other night talking about the new Nissan Leaf. It'd be fun to compare it against the Volt. And I know we've got at least one other couple out there who are driving a Volt and have had very good and happy experiences with it. And then point four, we'll work out a time, Dr. Allen. Point four, Dr. Allen says, best of success on your AIC Act work in Washington, D.C. Well, we're trying. We will do our dead level best. So here at 15 minutes past the hour, that's kind of the end. A couple more announcements, how this is all going to play out. We will have a show tonight and tomorrow night. Friday, no show because I will be in the air and then on the ground. For the first time in my life, I will be completely crossing the continent. I'll be landing in San Francisco sometime early on the early in the afternoon of Friday. I'm going out there to pay my respects and pay respects on behalf of a lot of us, my friends, you know, the folks I tell you that are the hardest working, bravest men and women I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, and on behalf especially of the AIC team, the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Team, paying our respects to the memory of Becky Tarbutton. She died the day after Christmas in a horrible, horribly sad circumstance down in Mexico. So her memorial is the following day, the 26th, and we'll be, well, going out there to remember her well and to let others know the value of her work in our lives. So that's the plan, and I won't be back, I think, just because of the way the return flights worked out. I won't be back until late on Monday evening. Kind of frustrating the way it works out when you're trying to find a cheap flight. If something should happen to change and I'm back beforehand, then we'll have a show Monday, but don't count on it. There will be shows on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of that week, with a special notice that Thursday and Friday of the week will be, in fact, will be live from the Health Action, sponsored by a wonderful organization called Families USA. That's Thursday and Friday, and there will be a steady stream of guests coming by the table to talk about where we go from here in terms of securing health care for all Americans. That's Thursday and Friday. It'll be live from the, I suspect the basement of the Hyatt Regent, or the Hyatt Regency, I think, on New Jersey Avenue in Washington, D.C. It should be quite an event. I've been looking at the guest list, and it's more than impressive. It's tremendous, the number of, when you sit down and you see something like that. It's really inspiring to see the number of people who are pouring heart and soul into trying to make things better. Let's see, the rest of the, well, that's far enough out. We'll leave the rest of the schedule alone for the time being. Except to say that I think I'm going to be, it appears that I'm going to be back in Wisconsin on the 16th, of February, as well as noting that on the 17th of February is that thing that I mentioned a couple of nights ago, this humongous effort being pulled together by 350.org and Bill McKibben and the team there to put 20,000 people on the Washington, D.C. Mall for President's Day to demand the rejection and ultimate burial, if we can say that, of the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. I'm not sure how it's going to play out, but I'm going to try to be there as well since, well, I'll be flying back from Wisconsin that day, and I might get home early enough to do that. Thanks for all the emails with the I hear you, Bobs, and coming in loud and clear. I appreciate that. Now, where to start? First of all, yes, I recognize that this is Wednesday, and Wednesday is not just any old day of the week. But we're not going to go there quite yet. Not just yet. I had an email to start the program out. Oh, by the way, before we go any further, since I'm in Washington, D.C., and since Agnes is with us, us being Ferg, me, Margie, no one is handling the phones back at home. So what that means is the only means of contacting the program this evening is via Skype. And the Skype handle is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N, all lowercase, all one word, Bob Kincaid Horn. And that's how we'll do the conversation part of conversation radio this evening, folks. So if you have never friended me on Skype, send a contact request out. I'll add you to the list. And we will take this conversation onward that way. And then things will go back to something resembling normal. And maybe one of these days we'll be able to end the hostage situation with regard to our toll-free number, if we can ever get that far ahead to be able to pay the ransom to the folks at CityNet. So there. Okay, I think we've got that all out of the way. Now, we begin with an email, as we did Monday night, from Ron in Raleigh. The email, the message, is titled, "Take the Point, Corporal Cindy." Ron in Raleigh says, "I'm sure you're aware that today the Pentagon opened 14,000 combat jobs to women. As liberals, we find it difficult to say that maybe having women in combat is not the best idea. The military's ability to see to the safety of female soldiers in rear echelon positions is more than a little spotty. While I believe that women are more than capable of some high-tech combat jobs," Ron says, "such as manning missile batteries, flying combat planes, etc., people need to understand that the call for females in combat comes from the female officer corps. You can't become a base commander without a combat ribbon. Every poll I've seen of female NCOs, they've expressed no interest in frontline combat duty. I, for one, would like to have fewer of the young men of my country as cannon fodder in our resource wars. Do we really need to see women amputees, victims of PTSD, and other things that are the result of combat duty? If the military gives the women soldiers the choice of combat duty, I feel it would be only fair that male soldiers have the same choice. In other words, as opposed to having it forced upon them." And it is thought-provoking. I know the right wing has been having an absolute hissy fit with, you know, the usual suspects. "Well, women just ain't as strong as us men folk." It's more of that same paranoia. And paranoia is not what motivates Ron's concerns. There's a big difference between principled objections and the sort of misogynistic, paranoid mumblings and maunderings of the right. As you can tell, there's a ton of daylight between the two positions. One says, "We are afraid as men we're going to be shown up by women who can kill brown people just as brutally as we can." And the other says, if it's going to be combat optional for women, why shouldn't it be combat optional for men? One comes from a place of misogyny. The other comes from a place, well, the other comes from an equality conversation. And then there's ultimately the question of whether or not what purpose it has. Let's see, how many wars have we been involved in lately that have actually spoken to anything regarding the security of people trying to raise their families in the United States of America without threat from foreign intervention. Let's see. Yeah. Afghanistan? No, Afghanistan didn't. We chose to go into that war. Iraq? No, we chose that war too. Gulf, the Bush War One. Well, that was a ginned up public relations piece of crap. So no, that didn't have anything to do with our national well-being. Oh, okay, so that's the goal. Okay, so we're at 1990. I know. We intervened humanitarianly in Grenada. No? Okay, we'll get Panama? Oh, wait, we were taken down. A former CIA operative had gone rogue, Manuel Noriega. Okay. Yeah, you'd think that Saddam Hussein would have learned from Manuel Noriega, wouldn't you? Then again, Manuel Noriega lived to tell the tale. Not so much Saddam Hussein. Both of those men, crossed the Bush family, and they paid the price. Okay, so we're at Panama. Vietnam? Well, I'm too young to offer a really meaningful expression of whether or not we had any real business there. Korea? And that takes us to 1945. The question is a large one. And that larger question is, for what purpose do we use our combat troops? Background on this, the ruling by Defense Secretary Leon Panetta to remove the military ban on women in combat amounts to overturning a Joint Chiefs of Staff or a Defense Department ruling of 1994 that banned women from being assigned to smaller ground combat units. And Ron's point is very well taken. We haven't done a very good job of keeping women from being women serving in the military from being raped in non-combat positions. How's it going to be out on the front lines? Any guarantees? No, there would be no guarantees. Like I said, there's a big difference between objecting on the basis of coming from a position of preferring peace and the fact that going to war for oil companies really sucks, and we've got enough men getting their lives ruined out of that. It's not really a sign of equality that we're going to ruin some women's lives. There's a difference between that argument and, say, the opinion of a real live, honest to God jackanapes by the name of Tom Cotton. Yeah, he's a Repiglican from Arkansas. He showed up early in the month here on the Laura Ingraham radio show. You know, if you like your insanity straight, no chaser, Laura's the one for you. And he had a whole different set of concerns about the women's being in the gun-toting part of the army.
To have women serving in infantry, though, could impair the mission essential task of those units. And that's been proven in study after study, just from a matter of, it's nature, you know, upper body strength and physical movements and speed and endurance and so forth.
Yeah, see, that's it's like you. It wouldn't be fair to set up a tennis tournament, no matter how strong she is. It wouldn't be fair to set up a tennis tournament where, say, a woman played a man, because all men are better and stronger and faster and have more upper body strength than any woman. That happened. That happened. A woman named Billie Jean King beat the snot out of a man tennis player named. Maybe I didn't mean tennis. Maybe I meant golf. Oh, not that either, huh? Well, football. See, football. Football's like war. Builds character, don't you know? Helps you get things like, oh, I don't know, imaginary girlfriends. Jesus, these idiots. That man drove me to drink, a fact for which I am eternally grateful. Oh, brother. But that's a starting place. And since we're talking about stupid repiglickins, it kind of creates a nice, high-quality segue into, well, more stupid repiglickins. Because we ran out of time on Moran Monday. Oh, let's see. Where shall we go? Oh, yeah. What do you say? Would you mind if we went to the Benghazi hearing in this? And look, I don't necessarily want to have a full-on discussion. Well, who the hell am I to say that? This is Conversation Radio. We'll have the conversations you decide to have. But outgoing Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, appeared before the Senate of the United States today, and later before the Mad Hatter's Tea Party in the House of Representatives, and over it was a little bit, well, it almost resembled sanity in the Senate, because the Democrats hold the majority there, and that meant that there wasn't a guy in a funny hat with 5 7/8 stuck in the hat band running the show. Nonetheless, the right wing did bring the crazy. It started with a man that John Nichols over at the Nation said Wisconsinites refer to as Wisconsin's idiot senator, a guy named Tim Johnson, who thought he was really going to pin that Hillary to the wall. See, he's a right-winger, so he hates Hillary on principle. I mean, he hates her as Secretary of State. He hated her as a member of the Senate. He's probably quite convinced that she's that somewhere got tucked away the secret plans that she pulled together to kill Vince Foster, right? I mean, he hates her when she breathes in. He hates her when she breathes out. He's got the typical case of Clinton derangement syndrome. He's probably one of those right-wingers who was salivating every time that Flush Flimball would tell the right wing, oh, my friend Hillary Clinton has designs on the White House, and she will be your next president. She will and she will eat babies for breakfast, my friends, because she hates life. Or, you know, the Ann Coulters of the world who said she was a, oh God, it got so tiresome, secret lesbian, that kind of thing. So this was a big moment on the world stage for Wisconsin Senator Tim Johnson. Right? Yeah, check this out.
But, I mean, I'm going back to then Ambassador Rice 5 days later going to Sunday shows and what I would say purposefully misleading the American public. Well, why wasn't that known? And again, I appreciate the fact of the transparency of this hearing, but why?
You know, Senator, you could shut up and quit embarrassing yourself, but that's probably beyond your capabilities given the fact that you're a right-wing republic and still out there going on and on and on. Susan Rice. Oh, and you want to talk about embarrassing, but we'll get to it later. Grumpy old John McCain. Couldn't even get a question in. Just sat there, you know, lecturing at her. Get off my lawn. He yells at clouds. But he could have stopped. He didn't have to go down the Susan Rice road. But since he did, well, I must admit, it's kind of fun to, regardless of your opinion, I know, she's halfway to being a Republican, I know, she's corporatist, yes, absolutely, she's in Walmart's pocket, yes, definitely. She is also, however, not nearly as crazy as Tim Johnson. You know, this is a comparative exercise here. And if you enjoy good theater, this was fun.
Weren't we transparent at that point in time?
Well, first of all, Senator, I would say that once the assault happened and once we got our people rescued and out, our most immediate concern was, number one, taking care of their injuries. As I said, I still have a DS agent at Walter Reed seriously injured. Getting them into Frankfurt, Ramstein to get taken care of, the FBI going over immediately to start talking to them. We did not think it was appropriate for us to talk to them before the FBI conducted their interviews. So, and we did not, I think this is accurate, sir, I certainly did not know of any reports that contradicted the IC talking points at the time that Ambassador Rice went on the TV shows. And, you know, I just want to say...
Now, before she just says, can I ask a question? Any of you, in the same or similar circumstances, and the vast majority of the Horn family are smart enough to be in the same or similar circumstances, wouldn't you have said the same thing? Because in essence, what she's telling this pea-brained pissant is that she wasn't going to have somebody, some investigator, walking up to somebody trying to put their guts back in their blown-away belly and say, can I, and get all Columbo on them.
That's good. Just one more question there while your intestines are falling out. Can you tell me exactly what happened, you know, when your guts started pouring out of your body? I hate to bother you, but just that one question, yeah.
Even at the highest levels of empire, some sense of decorum and decency still does obtain, doesn't it?
Hey, yeah, I know. You're pumping blood out of a sucking chest wound, but can you, with your last dying breath there, can you answer a couple of questions before you expire? No, hey, nurse, stay away, nurse, stay away. Doc, we'll handle this over here. We got questions to ask before you can come over and start suturing wounds and you with your sponges and things. Now, you can get to it. Oh, he's dead. God damn it.
That's what apparently this every man Einstein wanted. Well, let's let Hillary continue, Secretary of State.
That, you know, people have accused Ambassador Rice and the administration of, you know, misleading Americans. I can say, trying to be in the middle of this and understanding what was going on, nothing could be further from the truth. Was information developing? Was the situation fluid? would we reach conclusions later that weren't reached initially?
Madam Secretary, do you disagree with me that a simple phone call to those evacuees to determine what happened wouldn't have ascertained immediately that there was no protest?
Yeah, a simple phone call. I mean, you know, if he hadn't got any hands to hold him with, thing, you know, he can kind of tuck it there between what's left of his shoulder and his cheek, and it's just a simple phone call. Just one more question.
Yeah, I know. I know there's noise coming from the player. That's because things don't work the way they are supposed to quite often when you're out here on the razor's edge of technology and doing things on the fly. I know. But we'll get past the noise from the computer, won't we? Yeah, because it has to do with playback. But let's get back to Senator Colombo here.
To me, that a simple phone call to those evacuees to determine what happened wouldn't have ascertained immediately that there was no protest. I mean, that was a piece of information that could have been easily obtained.
Well, but Senator,
within hours, if not days.
Senator, when you're in these positions, the last thing you want to do is interfere with any other process.
Well,
it's the fact. Number two, I would recommend highly you read both what the ARB said about it and the classified ARB, because even today, there are questions being raised. Now, we have no doubt they were terrorists, they were militants, they attacked us, they killed our people. But what was going on and why they were doing what they were doing...
Were misled.
Did you catch that? That was right close up against go F yourself. Yes, that's your excuse. No, that's a fact. It is factual. It is. This teabag and clown doesn't deal with facts in the first place. He wouldn't know a fact unless it was prepackaged and handed to him by the Koch brothers. In turn, which means, you know, it wouldn't be a fact. It would be paid for propaganda? No, that was cute. I realize that. I realize it's a good excuse. No, it's a fact. Well, like a cat playing with a mouse, Hillary grew tired playing with this numbnuts from the upper Midwest. I have no doubt that the good people of Wisconsin will see to the business of getting him out of its heritage, their heritage, as quickly as possible. Because he is. Tim Johnson, really, he's not the junior senator from Wisconsin. He's the stupid senator from Wisconsin. Oh, my God. And she's going to bust him. She's taking about as much as she's going to take from it, and she's going to bust him.
Protest, and then something sprang out of that, an assault sprang out of that. And that was easily ascertained that was not the fact.
But
and the American people could have known that within days, and they didn't know that.
With all due respect, the fact is, we had four dead Americans. Was it because of a protest, or was it because of guys out for a walk one night who decided they'd go kill some Americans? What difference at this point does it make? It is our job to figure out what happened and do everything we can to prevent it from ever happening again, Senator. Now, honestly, I will do my best to answer your questions about this, but the fact is that people were trying in real time to get to the best information. The IC has a process, I understand, going with the other committees to explain how these talking points came out. But, you know, to be clear, it is, from my perspective, less important today, looking backwards, as to why these militants decided they did it than to find them and bring them to justice. And then maybe we'll figure out what was going on in the meantime.
Works for me. You? Hey.
The stupid. It hurts. And that would have, that really would have been enough stupid for one day. Heck, that's enough stupid for a week. We're talking about Repiglickens here. And you know how it is with Repiglickens, especially the teabag kind. Repiglickens, well, goodness me. It's the clown car act at the circus. Little bitty car, great big clowns, two get out, two more get out. Two, and pretty soon, the center ring of the circus is just full of clowns. And there's crazy ones with the fright hair and the ones with the big feet and the ones with the big nose, all kinds of, but they're all clowns. And for a while there, for just a very few minutes, most of America thought that Wisconsin's Tim Johnson, that rhymed, had to be the most ignorant man on that committee. But they hadn't seen the lineup card. They didn't know who was batting cleanup on the stupid side. Tim Johnson had his moment in the stupid sun. But he was quickly eclipsed. I was sitting here with it going on the TV set, throwing together the rig and everything, and all of a sudden I heard this voice and I turned around and went, "Oh, it's him." Yeah. Our buddy from the Commonwealth of Kentucky libertarian ophthalmologist Rand Paul and this was you suddenly realize that Senator Johnson from Wisconsin was playing double A ball at best. Because Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Well, I mean, this is pro-stupid. This is the kind of stupid not just anybody can do. It took 3 minutes for Tim Johnson from Wisconsin to prove to everyone how goddamn dumb he is. It didn't take Rand Paul a minute. Now, he sat there and lectured the Secretary of State. And he used phrases like, "Had I been president, I would have." And I was eating a bowl of chicken noodle soup or something. And just about W.C. Fields spit-took my chicken broth all over the countertop when Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, said, "If I were president." Because all kinds of things came to mind. If monkeys were flying out your butt, if you had a brain. You know, there's a whole lot of ifs there that we can play with when it comes to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. The aqua Buddhist. He told Secretary Hillary that he would have absolutely fired her if he had been president. Think what you will of Hillary Clinton, but the fact that she did not look at him and say, "In your dreams, Junior," speaks to a pretty profound sense of self-possession and self-control. Watching Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, try to take on Secretary of State Hillary Clinton really was. It was like watching a man bring a rubber chicken to a sword fight. Avant! Quack. Quack, quack. On guard!
Quack.
Hello. Quack. My name is Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Quack. Prepare to die. There sat Hillary Clinton, the six-fingered lady. Oh, Jesus. So he does this whole lecture thing that goes on and on and on, painfully, agonizingly, on and on. And then he said, because somebody told him somewhere along the way that when you're a senator and you're at a hearing, you're supposed to end the speech with a question, kind of like Jeopardy. I'll take which Russian emigre, idiotic anarchist author was I named for, Alex? What is Ayn Rand? Only, no, it didn't make nearly as much sense as that. Well, let's just get to the clip if you can. I know there's electrical noise, but I don't know. Maybe John and I can sort that out somewhere along the way. No, I don't want us to miss any of this now. Hold on. Darn it.
Now, my question is the U.S. involved with any procuring of weapons, transfer of weapons, buying, selling, anyhow transferring weapons to Turkey out of Libya?
To Turkey?
It's worth going and finding the video clip just to see. Just to see Hillary's face. I mean, it's Rand Paul. It could just as easily have been, "Are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party of the United States?" And you know, we could expect that from Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. But after all this business about who didn't get fired and who got fired, absolutely all of which he had completely wrong, I might add. I'm sorry, not Tim Johnson, Ron Johnson. Oh, dang it. Thank you, Michael. I've been screwing that. Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. It's a triple rhyme. It's like poetic Scrabble. Not Tim. He's from South Dakota. Ron. Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. He works in the lumber mill there. He walks down the street, and all the people he meet, they say, "Hey, what's your name?" And he says, "My name is Ron Johnson. I'm a senator from Wisconsin, and I work in the lumber mills there." Sorry, my mother taught me that at her knee. Ron Johnson. What an idiot. But no, it's worth it. Do it later. Please don't tune away. Do it later. Go and just see this look on poor Hillary Clinton's face having been... Turkey? Because you can almost see the progress of all the work her staff did briefing her and getting her ready for this entire hearing. Now, Madam Secretary, you know there's some lunatics up there, and they're liable to ask some stupid questions. You know, they might even ask you if Oh, I don't know if you're a communist or something. Yeah, yeah, I got that. I got that. Turkey? It's like a Warner Brothers cartoon. No, Doc, this ain't Cinderella. This is Hansel and Gretel. Hansel. Turkey. I should probably be a better and more serious commentator upon the news. But when the Republicans were talking, I was watching for comic value. Turkey? Really? That's the Aqua Buddhist question today? Turkey. So we'll back up.
To Turkey? I will have to take...
Did you hear the voice crack? Did you hear... To Turkey? Because generally you have to turn on radio shows that air somewhere after 2 a.m. before you hear the double secret New World Order globalized dictator UN blue helmet Kenyan Muslim conspiracy to give all our freedoms to Turkey bit. But there, by God, by the grace of the voters of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, was Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, taking the Turkey-spiracy prime time.
Out of Libya.
To Turkey? I will have to take that question for the record. Nobody's ever raised that with me.
It's been in news reports that ships have been leaving from Libya and that they...
No, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, you hopeless dumbass. It has not been in news reports because what you read over at Wingnut Daily does not constitute news reports. That's Wingnut Daily. What you read over at Newsmax is not news. Newsmax is a brand name. Sweet. Jeez. Now, there's been news reports. Will somebody please explain to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, that Stephen Colbert isn't really a newscaster? Jesus.
May have weapons, and what I'd like to know is the annex that was close by, were they involved with procuring, buying, selling, obtaining weapons, and were any of these weapons being transferred to other countries, any country, Turkey included?
And was there fluoridation in ice cream, Madam Secretary, children's ice cream, fluoride in our precious bodily fluid? Hey, Kentucky, remind me. I owe you one. Really, I do. You know, there's been some discussion about whether or not, A, Ashley Judd would run for Senate at all from the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and B, whether she would run against Mitch McConnell in 2014, or... C, wait until 2016 and run against this blithering boob. D, I have a suggestion. Can we clone Ashley Judd? Please? Can we run her against both of them? Whip them both? Send them off to some John Galtian Galt's Gulch paradise. Honest to God.
Direct that question to the agency that ran the annex. And I will see what information is available. And
you're saying you don't know?
I do not know. I don't.
Face-saving 101. You're saying you don't know. No, Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, I don't know about that time that the aliens kidnapped you there in Kentucky Stan and took you up and anal probed you and everything. I don't know about that. I'm saying I don't know. Good God. But no, it really, this thing, that apparently this lunatic notion this thing has gotten real legs inside the paranoid right wing wearing your spaghetti strainer on top of your head radio listening news muck wingnut daily reading right. Michael heard the same thing. News reports? Prison Planet and InfoWars are now news reports, according to the Senate. Thanks, Kentucky. Just thanks. Again, as Irish Dave points out, as they say in Frankfurt, I'm home, Ayn Rand. And thank God there's only Ayn. And Michael pointing out, lest we forget, Senator Ron Johnson. Yeah, that was where I figured out that I'd gotten my Ron and my, Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. Lest we forget, Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, who ousted the great progressive Russ Feingold in 2010, is what happens when progressive liberals, lefties, and Democrats don't vote in off-year elections. P.S. Yes, Tim Johnson is the Democratic senator from South Dakota. I blame this on the profusion of Johnsons. And we have a bumper suggestion from Michael, who says, by the way, you had me at cloning Ashley Judd. Apparently that really worked for Marty, too. He said, sorry, I've had a crush since prepubescence. I understand. I do. Ron in Raleigh says, Rand Paul, really? Bob, as bad as his crazy-ass daddy is, I can only describe Rand Paul as a self-aggrandizing shithook. Senator Paul, boot, piss, heel, directions. What did I miss? You guys do that stuff to me. Senator Paul, boot, piss, heel, directions. You missed one, Ron. It's Senator Paul, boot, piss, heel, directions, fail. Because he couldn't. I sincerely doubt, as an aqua Buddhist physician, that Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, could successfully raise sea monkeys. And, you know, that's a really low standard, it is. It's a very low standard. I'm just saying. Oh, I gotta check the, check the music base here. I don't have nearly the music that I ordinarily have on the system at home. But Michael was suggesting we bump out of the filibuster with Tears for Fears and Everybody Wants to Rule the World. You know, in reference to the, if I were president, I would be another Lincoln. I would do some real big thinking if I only had a brain. No, I don't have that. I'm sorry, Michael, but I do have something else that I think might be effective, because there's sort of a metaphorical tie-in for what we witness every time one of these ignorant teabagging goobers opens his or her mouth. Mostly it's his. They are, after all, misogynistic teabagging goobers. This might work. But we'll take a little break and come back. Remember, contact is via Skype this evening. Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, is the contact. And a reminder, we have a $50 challenge on the table from Dr. Allen down in Texas, who says that any combination of people will answer his $50 challenge, he'll take his challenge and turn it into $100, and that way money gets tripled instead of just doubled, and it sure would help. Golly, it would help. So see if this works for a bumper. Sorry about the electrical noise. Can't be helped. This is Conversation Radio on America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
shame.
Sandbox and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Indeed, you are. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Wednesday night live from AIC headquarters in Washington, D.C. Not too awfully far from the Supreme Court, not too awfully far from the Capitol itself, up here working on the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign. Just kind of had to cleanse my palate there during the break of you know, the weirdness. And Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Too much. Much too much. But there are a couple of things. Just a couple of little observations. We like to have fun with journalism. Or not fun with, but we like to pay attention to journalism and what passes for it in this modern world, as it were. Got a note yesterday evening. You all know by now about the shooting at Lone Star Community College yesterday. The bad guy is in the hospital. Other people are in the hospital from some sort of godforsaken gunplay. Well, there are stories that occur within stories. And Dr. John wrote with one of those. He said, in the midst of the shooting at Lone Star College, the Houston Chronicle posted this brief. It's a screen capture of a tweet from a young Lone Star student who wrote that she heard shots in the hallway, at which point CNN's Justin Lear, who is at CNN Justin on Twitter, replied to her, "Do you have any pictures to share with CNN?" 7 minutes later, she replied, "No, because I didn't think to take pictures while I thought my life was in danger." Jesus. Now, John offers a caveat to all of this. The brief over at cron.com, the Houston Chronicle, notes that the young woman had tweeted, "Everyone, there is a man shooting at Lone Star North, Harris. This is not a joke. Please be safe. I'm so scared." And then she tweeted, "Please tell my mom that I'm okay. I just can't find service in the room I'm stuck in." And that's when CNN Justin asked for pictures. "I like to watch." Well, Dr. John said, what it doesn't show, the brief, is that 10 minutes, because Dr. John apparently followed up. Cool how that works, isn't it? What the brief doesn't show is that 10 minutes after that, Justin replied, "If you're interested in talking on CNN, let me know how I can contact you." Two things, says Dr. John. First, I suspect at CNN Justin will be deactivated within a day or so, considering the hate being piled up on him. Second, is this, by any stretch, good journalism? And I honestly don't blame Justin Lear, or at least not without evidence that he is indeed a soulless media drone bent on advancing his own career. I suspect he's got a boss who's making him troll social media for Lone Star students. This is what we get, says Dr. John, instead of analysis of causes and cures. Sensationalist browbeating of traumatized young people simply because the media can. In a way, I'm kind of glad that I got away from CNN when I did. Of course, I'd be an old fogey there by now. And, yeah, what's this social media you're talking about? Probably be as grumpy as John McCain. I'd like to hope not, but still. Out there looking for the scoop. Now, see here, young cub reporter Justin. Go and find me some terrified young students from Lone Star Community College, because we can't explain to them, everybody, what the problem is. Let's just show them some scared people. Sensationalist browbeating of traumatized young people simply because the media can. And I was fascinated to see that come in from Dr. John, because I had my own little story as we went up the road last night. Nighttime driving reminds me of how much I really do love radio. It's a pity the radio that's available is just mostly not very good anymore. Following, paralleling the spine of the Blue Ridge in the Blue Ridge Valley up Interstate 81 last night, I gave up on the FM band. And I went instead to AM for a very, very specific purpose. Out on the road, on a dark but clear and moonlit night, brightly lit semis howling past us. The road's clear. If a bit congested. Sort of calls out the need for the AM band and to see what you can bring in on the sky wave. AM radio, for some reason or another, the engine, you explain it later, always works better in the cold. And sweet Jesus, it was cold. Still is. Right cold snap on top of Washington, D.C. right now. But for as long as I could maintain the connection via the Skywave, I tuned in the legend, WSM Nashville, and listened to some real live, honest-to-God quality jockin' and country music that you can't find by tuning in your local FM 100,000-watt blowtorch. Today's hot country hits. Here's Zipperhead McClanahan with My Brains Fell in a Barrel of Beer. Whatever. No, no. No, this was the straight stuff, no chaser. And there's nothing quite like the way a pedal steel comes across in AM. If you are of a certain age, it almost sounds like it was meant to sound that way. Distant, and perhaps even more forlorn. It's Thinking Man's Radio. And I'm awful glad that there is still a 50,000-watt clear-channel blowtorch like WSM out there. We eventually ran out of WSM Nashville long about Woodstock, Virginia. And so I had to hit the scan button again. And lo and behold, it was right at the top of the hour. and I caught some station that is affiliated with the Fox News radio network. Now, I'm not talking about a simulcast or Sean Hannity or some sort of other drivel. I'm talking about a straight-ahead, straightforward, top-of-the-hour newscast. What used to be about 5 minutes with a minute of commercials buried inside it and a minute on the back end. I used to do that. Jesus. Well, some woman who works for Fox led her top-of-the-hour newscast with the following. See if you can spot the propaganda. Her lead was,
it's a gun-free school, but today it wasn't.
Really? It's a gun-free school, but today it wasn't. The story of the shooting. When I got up here and got everything hooked up, I went and double-checked because the version of events that I heard this woman deliver on the Fox News radio network, we report, you decide. And it really was that, we report, you decide, because listening to it, I went, this doesn't sound like reality. I can't wait to read actual stories and decide if it is. Because the way this propagandist for the NRA and the Republican Party described the shooting at Lone Star Community College North, it sounded like somebody's gun had just gone off. You know, whoopsie. It sounded like it was no big deal. Now, bear in mind the story from the brief from the Houston Chronicle that Dr. John sent along, featuring a terrified young woman in a classroom simply trying to get information out to her mama that she was okay. Right? Well, over on Fox News Radio, and for the life of me, I wish I knew this woman's name because I'd write a letter of complaint or something for which they would be eternally grateful because they love the publicity. I'm halfway ashamed of even talking about them in this light. But my God, it was a gun-free school, but it wasn't today. There was an accidental shooting at a community college near Houston today when one student's firearm went off and apparently hit another student. What? Went off? Not when one student drew a gun and fired upon another? The school's janitor was accidentally hit. What is this? Is this a news outfit or is this defense counsel for the shooter? Good God. And I did. I came up here and I did my due diligence and I looked up story after story after story after story to try to find if maybe, because, you know, in the heat of breaking news, sometimes information is less than accurate because it's based on perceptions in the moment and not necessarily a fully formed précis of what exactly is going on. And I thought, well, maybe Cephas took his gun to school and I don't know. He was reaching for a couple of quarters for the pop machine, and he caught the trigger of his Glock instead, and it accidentally went off. And I don't know, the bullet ricocheted off the floor and hit the janitor and hit the other guy, and it was just, no big deal, just a shooting. But no, every other news story I read as Marty writes, he said, I think the gun went off over someone being unhappy with their grade. There was a lot of coverage of this. Tons of it. And by the way, the shooting at Lone Star Community College was the 49th shooting at a school since Columbine. Let's see, the way that the story is generally understood here in this firearm mad culture of ours. Police described the incident as an altercation between two individuals, one of whom had student ID and a handgun. Both of them experienced gunshot wounds, and a maintenance man was caught in the crossfire and shot in the leg. By the way, the website for Lone Star Community College says that they employ both armed police officers and unarmed security guards. Nonetheless, a good guy with a gun did not stop a bad guy with a gun. I can't find anything that suggests that this was a case of accidental discharge of a firearm. But that didn't slow down Fox News Radio or Fox Radio News. Jesus. But while we're on the subject of journalism, just real quick. Again, as you know, I was watching the Senate hearing today. And I was watching on, yes, CNN. When I looked at the TV, it was kind of out of the corner of my eye because I was doing the stuff over here. TV's about 20 feet away. And I looked, and I said, what? And I got up out of my chair, and I ran over, and I looked at the font, and I forget exactly what the main thing was on there. So it was something like, Secretary Clinton testifies about Benghazi. And then the thing that whoever's in charge of that at CNN had put up underneath it read, and this is verbatim, Goo Goo Dolls release new album. Secretary Clinton testifies about Benghazi. Goo Goo Dolls release new album. Now, I understand the desire to keep people on the channel and everything. Because here in a little bit, they're going to break away and they're going to deliver some products. They're going to deliver some viewers to some product sellers. Because that's the way for-profit media works. If they could have shown footage of Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and Rand Paul simply flinging poo at each other, they would have done that. If there was some marketing research that said, that eventually they could cut away from it long enough to deliver some viewers to some product sellers. Secretary Clinton testifies about Benghazi. Goo Goo Dolls release new album. And it's not just CNN. It's not just MSNBC. They all do it. But do we ever even think about the fact that maybe they ought not? That maybe some things are serious enough that you turn off the stupid shit at the bottom of the screen? That maybe in the middle of a fairly involved, serious, well, to the extent that we're not talking about the comic relief that was provided by people like Ron Johnson from Wisconsin and Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. But some things are serious enough that we just turn off the stupid publicity at the bottom. Of course not. That's just dumb. Because after all, CNN has nothing to do with journalism, everything to do with selling crap in between its segments. The business in Texas, however, whether it's the accidental shooting that existed in the weird little mind of some news reader at Fox Radio, or whether it's the actual incident in which a person was unable to control their temper long enough to keep them from shooting another individual and then shooting an innocent bystander. Either which way, it's still, that incident is terrifying, as were the other 98 school shootings since Columbine. And so consider this. Texas Betsy just sent me a note. My fifth graders, you know, Texas Betsy teaches. Texas Betsy is a teacher. And she says, my fifth graders asking me if I will take defense classes, if I will bring a gun to school, why the middle school has armed police, and implicitly, if they are safe in school. Texas Betsy says, it breaks my heart. Well, Betsy, I'll be curious to see what your answers are. Who was the Yahoo last week who suggested that teachers needed to keep a handgun in their desk? Remember that story? Because Michael sent something along after that story that it was Rand Paul. How could I forget? Yeah, the stupid all just runs together. Yeah, Rand Paul wants teachers to have, you know, a Glock in the desk drawer. And after we went with that story about a week ago, Michael wrote in and he said, just listening to Thursday's podcast, 117, about 1 minute, an hour and 28 minutes in, regarding Rand Paul wanting teachers to have a gun in their desks, I was a high school English teacher for 1 year. Yes, just one. And I can't tell you how goddamn furious that suggestion just made me. Goddamn that little twit, meaning Rand Paul. When I was teaching as a first and last year teacher, my desk was in an office shared with several other teachers, not in a classroom, not even near my classrooms. I did not have my own classroom or classroom desk. They were other teachers' rooms, and they were scattered about on various floors of various different buildings. I had to carry and cart all of my classroom supplies between classes, between buildings, after every period. And, yes, I had to drag a cart up and down stairs full of teenagers and outside in the snow. My classes. Two were college prep English and relatively manageable most days. But three were remedial, dumping the troublemakers and jerks in with the kids who had genuine learning disabilities, the kids who steal and monopolize a teacher's attention for sport, and the kids who genuinely needed some extra attention, respectively. In one class, I had a few 18, 19, and 20-year-old sophomores, no joke, twice my size. I was 23, Michael notes, with parole officers, some of whom would threaten me on a daily basis. One of the special ed advisors would not permit me to allow the kids to take books home because she insisted they would not bring them back. Furthermore, I was often not allocated enough books for all three remedial classrooms, so I could not leave the books in the classrooms anyway. Some teachers whose classrooms I was occupying strongly frowned upon leaving my stuff in their rooms anyhow. So I had to carry 30-plus books from building to building, room to room. It was a goddamn mess of a situation and disillusioned me into giving up teaching for good. So with all that as prologue, Michael says, let's throw some firearms and live ammo into that situation. That sounds good. I could barely get a handle on all my books and papers flying all over the place most days. I suspect the bullets would have done likewise. Good grief. Rand Paul. Him with the hatred of the fires of a thousand suns. See, that's what happens when you apply the real world to the idiotic dumbassery that inhabits the right wing in this country. Yeah, Michael does note, by the way, with regard to my let's clone Ashley Judd suggestion, a few questions about Ashley Judd cloning, says Michael. A, do you actually possess this technology? B, if yes, would the clone also be married to that IndyCar driver, or would she be single? C, if the latter, would you mind giving her my number? Sorry, says Michael, you were saying something about Benghazi, Rand Paul, etc. My mind completely left the room after you put that cloning idea out there. P.S., obligatory Star Trek reference for the night. Ashley guest starred on Star Trek The Next Generation as a brief love interest of Wesley Crusher. Wesley Crusher. Not coincidentally, Wesley Crusher is almost universally reviled amongst mostly male TNG fans. Anyway, that's where my boyhood crush originated. Somehow it's reassuring and reaffirming of my taste in women to see what an amazing activist and future senator Ms. Judd has become. In response to my... Thanks, Michael. Actually, I do possess the technology, and, well, someone must guard such things for good. And, well, as long as we don't clone the IndyCar driver... responding to what Michael wrote about his one first and last year of teaching. Texas Betsy says, I have not had enough books to send books home in 15 years. She says, and I can relate to most of what Michael just said. Do most parents of children in public school now understand the world of the teacher? I mean, right-wing parents of public school children, assuming there are any, most of them are probably saying, the Sacred Heart Academy of Jesus. Hey. Do most parents understand the world of a public school teacher? Or do we simply assume that the world of the public school teacher is the world of the public school teachers we had? Can't send books home? I never would have read To Kill a Mockingbird for the first time if we couldn't send books home. There wasn't enough time to just sit there and get it done in class.
John Knowles a separate piece. You know, these things, it's interesting. They hand books like that to young adolescents as a way of introducing concepts of ethics into the discussion. And whether it be John Knowles a separate piece or Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird, they will both do the trick. Can't send books home? I mean, Jesus, I was a public school student in Alabamistan. There's Michael in what used to be considered a fairly wealthy state, you know, Ohio. I don't know, maybe it was another state, but he mentioned snow. And he's talking about carting books up and down stairs into and out of different buildings. I don't think we fully understand how far the idea of public education has been driven into the dirt by these right-wing haters of all things having to do with the commons. Tamara writes in from San Diego. And thank you for your help, Tamara. It's much appreciated. Tamara writes in from San Diego. Michael's letter rings a bell. Note the school-related humor, rings a bell. My sister taught at a public school in New York and couldn't pass out rulers without students snapping them in half or lab equipment without it getting thrown across the room. Sure, add guns into that mix. What could possibly go wrong? Right. And two separate emails on from separate individuals. Oh, wait. Let me finish off. Texas Betsy has updated her experience. She said, Bob, we read two to a book for social studies and language arts. You know, I just said John Knowles and Harper Lee, because that was like, what, 8th to 9th grade English? No, we're talking about not being able to send the textbooks home. We're not talking about extraneous reading assignments, little pissant paperback books. We're talking about not being able to send the basic textbooks home from which children are expected to learn at least some of the material. Textbooks. Trying to learn algebra without taking the algebra book home. And we have some experience with this, Agnes and I do. We used to look at the kids when they'd come home. Where are your books? Well, I got all my work done in school. And I'm thinking, must not be given as much work as they used to. Because there was no way I could get home without homework. And oh, well, never mind. Betsy says, Bob, we read two to a book for social studies and language arts. Library books, which are called AR books, can go home. A supervisor told me that the purpose of library books is for kids to earn AR points. No textbooks go home. Ever. My last year in Austin, when I was teaching from the wheelchair, they wanted me to cart books all around. Instead, I split my class set in half and just hoped they'd all still be around by the end of the year. Yeah, an AR means accelerated reader. See, way back when I was riding the dinosaur to school, I mentioned Harper Lee and John Knowles. Those didn't come from the library. Every English class had enough copies of that paperback for every student to go and read a copy in Alabama. In 1977. I'm old. Two separate comments on another topic. Andy writes in from California, Bob, I heard you mention Whole Foods CEO John Mackey on the 121 podcast on Monday. This guy is a true wacko. You got it, a plutocrat speaking down to the proletariat. This moron knows what's best for the proletariat. Every time one of his employees asks me to give a charitable contribution at the checkout, I defer to CEO John Mackey. Please have CEO John Mackey contribute for me. When they don't understand who John Mackey is or look at me perplexed, I pull out his Wall Street Journal editorial from August 11, 2009. He lets it all hang out in that piece. I try to explain to them that their big boss doesn't believe in government. He's a we're-all-on-our-own libertarian health care insurance, forget it, take care of yourself, you're on your own baby type. By the way, my girlfriend says he's a billionaire. She saw him recently, hyping a new book at the Commonwealth Club, the book circuit, just yesterday. Number of links here of to information regarding John Mackey. Andy closes saying, I'd be very circumspect in promoting Whole Foods as a worker's paradise. Edward L. Bernays, propaganda at work. Lucky for me, I don't have one to not bring my business to. We go to Walmart, or we go to Kroger's, or we don't go. Oh, I'll take that back. We've got crude food up the road, too. It's hanging on. Darlene writes in, also on John Mackey. Bob, regarding your comments on John Mackey on last night's program, I've never shopped at Whole Foods because it's not located anywhere near me. See, we have the same problem, Darlene. However, I thought to make a destination trip to one about an hour away to see what all the hubbub is about. But after hearing John Mackey this week in a few interviews on NPR and learning what a complete jackhole he is, I'm so glad I never spent any of my hard-earned money in one of his stores. Forget making a destination trip. I will never shop there. People I've met who shop at Whole Foods are fairly conscientious individuals who care about the environment and the food system because the commercial food system is totally corrupt and is killing us. I certainly hope that those who shop there do not think that Obamacare amounts to fascism, which is what Mackey stated on NPR and later retracted when he realized he'd stuck his foot in it. I think John Mackey did a lot of damage to the Whole Foods brand. I think it was even mentioned in the NPR interviews that Whole Foods might be going public, too. If I were a ruthless majority shareholder in Whole Foods, the first thing I'd do is fire John Mackey. In addition to Mackey's stupidity on climate change, you also have to wonder just how healthy the people working at Whole Foods are these days. I think people are smartening up about such things, Darlene says. Hence, the major financial problems Red Lobster and Olive Garden encountered in the few months following their anti-Obamacare campaign, significant loss of patronage. Because they'd rather cut employees' hours to part-time to avoid providing full-time employees with basic health insurance coverage under Obamacare. Well, there was such a backlash that, guess what? They've scrapped the idea. For now. Do you want to shop at food stores or eat in restaurants where the owners, CEOs, don't want to provide their workers with some health insurance because in their warped little minds it amounts to fascism or will cut just a tiny bit into their cushy salaries and profits at the top? Darlene answers her own question. She says, no way. It's kind of like going up the road the other day, or going down the road. We were headed home, Ferg and I, from here back to almost level West by God, Virginia. And we were trying to think of some cheap-ass fast food where we could go through quick and just keep moving and get home sooner. And Ferg looks at me and goes, Subway? And I said, no way. I love those little moments. Jim noting via email, new violence. In 1971, the guidance teacher was stabbed and barely survived. I've been around a long time, says Jim. Ron in Raleigh pointing out, he says, consider the fact that the number of textbook publishers has shrunk to less than a handful. So what's happened? The cost of school books has skyrocketed, just like college school books. School districts can't afford sufficient numbers of books to give one to each student, plus Texas controls content. P.S. Mr. Mackey did not apologize. He just repeated what he had said while doing this with his hands. Remember the commercial. Speaking of Texas and school books, there's a story I wanted to get to on More and Monday that works equally well with Prayer Meeting Wednesday. And that's this. And yes, you probably didn't need to ask, but it comes from, well, Texas. So over at Southern Methodist University, home of the George W. Bush Presidential Comic Book Collection, they've actually got some real live honest-to-goodness professors. They've even got a religious studies department. And someone of those professors, did some digging around to find out just what it is Texas children are being taught in terms of religion. Because, you know, that's a little bit shaky ground there, what, you know, religion. Mark Chancey is a religious studies professor at Southern Methodist University. And he found in his review that Texas public school students, you know, not over there at the Sacred Heart of Literal Jesus, the Christ Academy, public school students. He found that public school students in Texas are being taught young earth creationism. See, it used to be that fundies would try to get away with that, and then people would sue them, and they'd get stopped and told, no, you can't do that. Well, now, in places like Texas Stan, they just do it anyway. And to hell with the courts. Because, you know, the courts will side with them anyway. Remember, this is Texas. This is whose Supreme Court held that it was a violation of religious freedom for a young woman to be able to sue a church that beat the demons out of her. Really. The church's First Amendment rights allegedly trump the rights of an individual to sue the church for civil harms done. But even this comes as a bit of a shocker. SMU religious studies professor Mark Chancey found instances, and this is from Right Wing Watch, found instances of students learning a literal interpretation of the Bible, that the earth is approximately 6,000 years old, you know, just a little bit younger than the written recipe for beer, and that Judaism, and Texas Betsy sent this story along. Texas Betsy is observantly Jewish, and we had a lovely note the other evening from Mark in San Francisco who contributed based upon a philosophy of I guess we could say Jewish philanthropy or rights. It was touching deeply. It was one of those letters I print and save. So sit down, y'all. Texas public school students are being taught that Judaism is a flawed and incomplete religion. A flawed and incomplete religion. I'd kind of like to have that explained to me, that incompleteness of Judaism. Seeing how they pretty much, in that neck of the woods, invented monotheism, it's kind of up to them to declare what is and isn't complete. Christianity and Islam are, well, Johnny-come-latelys by comparison. Oh, dear me. Then there's Noah's Ark. And, you know, everything just ties together. I've got one of those right-wing emails that I get from time to time. And it's just precious. Well, where are you? There you are. I get these right-wing emails asking me to interview people that I really wouldn't trust with a package of sea monkeys. Mary Irwin has flirted with death. The hell does that mean? Hey, baby. Mary Irwin has flirted with death, climbing Mount Ararat's unforgiving glacial slopes 3 times. That sounds cool. Except Mary Irwin doesn't climb mountains, you know, for the same reason that bank robbers rob banks, you know, because they're there. It wasn't adventure she was seeking in the Turkish frontier. Oh, hell no. She was looking for the ancient boat that saved 2 at a time from the Great Flood. Drawing from her personal experiences and 25 years of in-depth research, really? It takes 25 years to read the Noah part of Genesis? Even if we factor in the fact that, and this is a fact, that the Noah story was completely plagiarized from previous myths of the general region, even if, and that you would want to go and maybe read those myths as well, and, well, okay, so you read all the flood myths. That doesn't take 25 years. It might take 25 minutes. Drawing from her personal experiences and 25 years of in-depth research, Irwin reveals the facts behind the final resting place of Noah's Ark in her latest book, The Unsolved Mystery of Noah's Ark. I think there's a Sasquatch living in it right now. The facts behind the final resting place of Noah's Ark. Okay, yeah, listen, save your money. This thing's probably at least $10-$15. Kick that this way. We are $10 along the way toward meeting. Thanks, Sal. We are $10 along the way toward meeting Dr. Allen's Triple Your Money Challenge. 40 more bucks, and he will. He'll triple the money. And $50 will turn almost magically into 150. Don't buy this book. Just shoot the book price this way, because I haven't even read it, and I can sit here and tell you about the facts behind the final resting place of Noah's Ark in her latest book. The facts behind the final resting place of Noah's Ark are deeply embedded in the psyche of Mary Irwin. I almost hesitate to do this to you, but it's too much fun not to.
Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
The title of the book, The Unsolved Mystery of Noah's Ark. And the author is Mary Irwin. And Mary joins us now on Indie Book Publishing. This interview brought to you by Westbow Press. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Steve.
Well, great to have you on this show, and feels like not only you're here, but your husband, James, is with us. A former astronaut, walked on the moon. You two were very, very dedicated for many, many years.
Oh, dear, those are
haven't
ones.
You've been involved in just about every way. You have climbed the mountain.
Yes, sir, I have. Three times until
three
I finally
times.
Told my husband, I don't want to go there for my summer vacation anymore.
Mount Ararat, that we all are told that's where Noah's
it, brother.
Ark is.
It doesn't say it's on Mount Ararat.
No.
And most Christians don't understand that it depends on who, what country owned that mountain at the time. So over the...
Did you get that? It depends on... Most Christians don't understand. It's not even a Christian story. We bogarted the... we bogarted the Old Testament, remember? The unsolved mystery of Noah's Ark. The unsolved mystery is why people continue to... persist in the notion that Noah's Ark is a real and factual event. Because it doesn't take long to realize that sending old Noah out to chase down a couple of, say, cheetahs and make sure you've got a male and a female, this is not going to be fun. How about a couple of deer? The males don't even run with the females any time except the rut. They're not going to enjoy their time together there on the boat. But Jesus, he made them love each other while they yes. Or maybe, I don't know, maybe he captured them during the rut. Jesus Christ. But anyway, back to the actual story. So in this little piece of research, into what poor, defenseless, innocent school children are being taught in Texas, and the fact that they are being taught that Judaism is a flawed and incomplete religion. Well, how about an example? And this is a really old, tired one. It is 2013. There are not enough textbooks to send home with students. We're just a couple of crackers short of Soylent Green. And in 2013, the Texas public school system is, in places, teaching racial origins traced from Noah. Some of you have already begun screaming. The generations of racial distinction that occurred through the three sons of Noah. From the son Shem, we get the Jews, the Oriental races. We're not even going to fool with that more modern Asian word now, are we? Oriental races and Semitic peoples. From Japheth, we get Western Europeans and Caucasians. You know, the people of the Caucasus, who later on came down out of the Caucasus and across Western Europe and down into India and Persians. And then there's old Ham. Anybody who knows a tenth of the racist shibboleths that inhabit old South-styled Jim Crow apartheid. Anybody who knows a tenth of the crap that got delivered from pulpits prior to the Civil War and damned well after it, too, for that matter, in the South, knows that from Ham is descended all the dark-skinned African races and the so-called Canaanite nations. See, black folks come from Ham because God cursed Ham. It's in the book, it's in the ninth chapter of Genesis, where it describes the fact that Ham, well, he didn't really mean to, but when you're fooling with old Jehovah God, you don't have to mean to. All liability is based upon fault, don't you understand? And you can get smitten for crap you didn't mean to do. Back in Genesis 9, it explains to us how Ham, whether he meant to or not, done seen his daddy without no clothes on. And lo, he beheld the nakedness of Noah. So that's when that brute of a bearded juvenile delinquent reached down from heaven and cursed Ham so that everybody would know by his descendants that they were descended from the guy who done seen daddy naked by turning his skin dark. Really. Not kidding. It is 2013. And this stuff is still being taught. Poison being poured into the innocent ears and through innocent eyes of little school children in Texas. It's not just stuff like that that's in religion class. Oh, no. No, hell no. No. If you go over to government class or American history, you get taught that all of the founding fathers of the new United States, they's all Christians. Protestant Orthodox Christians who were trying to bring together a Christian nation, that all them atheists and Muslims and Jews and Wiccers is trying to ruin and taking us away from God and causing things like 9/11 and earthquakes and volcanoes and high-priced pornography. Really? Reading, Writing, and Religion 2, Texas Public School Bible Courses in 2011 and 12 by Mark Chancy is a brilliant piece of writing. And the things he found will make you run screaming into the night. And it's pretty deep work, too. Bible course basics. Whose Bible is studied? I mean, there's a big difference between the vulgar and the King James homosexually inspired Protestant Bible. Section 10, Treatment of Judaism. Page 44. There is no reason why students cannot learn about historically influential interpretations or doctrines, e.g., the Trinity, the Fall, the Serpent is Satan, in the name of cultural literacy, but those interpretations should be presented as the products of the interpretive practices and traditions of particular religious communities, not as universal and self-evident readings. In particular, if a course does study these sorts of Christian interpretive traditions, it is essential that they give equal time to classic Jewish interpretations of these passages as well. Jews, needless to say, do not find the Trinity in Genesis or anywhere else in their scripture, nor do they regard the consequences for Adam and Eve's disobedience as humanity's eternal damnation before God. Creation is not the only place where particular theological concerns dictate how the text is discussed. Several courses reflect a significant preoccupation with eschatology, the theology of the end times, with course materials that synthesize the contents of Revelation and other biblical books into very detailed eschatological schemas. Prosper Independent School District's event timeline frames not only the biblical story, listen carefully, not only the biblical story, but all subsequent history into its framework, beginning with Noah's three sons and concluding in 2011 with a note on the modern Jewish population of Israel, which figures prominently in some eschatological frameworks. One of the things that the school children are taught is survival of the Jewish nations is one of the miracles of history, and her greatest agony is yet to come. It was sealed in the book of Daniel 12:4-9, opened in Revelation 5:5-7:6-19, Matthew 18:21-23, John 37, Revelation 12:12-10, hut. The course explains that the first time the Lord gathered his people back was after the Babylonian captivity. The second time the Lord will gather his people back will be at the end of the age. Again, this is not from the Sacred Heart of Jesus Christ anointed Christian Academy. This is what is done to little school children who attend public schools in Texas. By the way, Texas Betsy, our resident Torah authority, she said, that dark skin stuff ain't in my Torah. See, it would be so much easier. Well, no, it wouldn't be easier. It would be troublesome, and I understand why they don't do it. But it would be very helpful if some Jewish scriptural Torah scholars would take the time to look at Christians and say, it's our book. That ain't in it. I mean, what Christianity has done to Jewish scripture is the equivalent of taking a Sharpie and putting a handlebar mustache on the Mona Lisa. And then something else I heard on the radio last night. And bless her heart, it was Terry Gross. And she was interviewing, and I could, you know what, I could see the woman's big old hair just a piled up to Jesus. She was a woman that ran a crisis, executive director of some goofy-ass crisis pregnancy center that our buddy Beth in Dallas probably knows all about. They've got a rolling ultrasound wagon, and they engage in a little, you know, slut-shaming. Bless your heart, it's so terrible. You had an abortion, sweetheart. You just come on in here and tell us all about how the devil made you do it, you filthy bitch. You know how fundies are. But along the way, bless her heart, Terry Gross said, and you know the Terry Gross voice. I can't really do the Terry Gross voice because I could never work at NPR because I'd probably run out into the street and begin tearing at my garments and rending my garments and tearing at my hair if I had to talk like this for very much longer than I am right now. But you know the Terry Gross voice. In describing these fundamentalist wackadoodles, she says, and these crisis pregnancy centers are often run by Christian organizations. And I had the family with me, but I talked to the radio, and they've been, you know, the children have been with me for, I mean, they understand old dad talks to the radio sometimes. And I was, Terry, wouldn't it, I mean, it would not be journalistically unfair for you to say that these crisis pregnancy centers are run by people who consider themselves to be Christian or claim they are Christian. Because I'm pretty sure that if we would do the hard work involved with it, we could, for instance, go over to some Episcopalian people and say, you see that lady over there with the beehive hair done up to Jesus who says that the Bible is the literal word of God and it really was an Adam and that sinful and that women should not be allowed to take care of their own insides. You see her? Is that woman a Christian? And, you know, you're fairly candid Episcopalian or maybe a straightforward Lutheran would look at you, and God knows it. Well, no, Unitarian wouldn't. But they might look at you and say, that is not Christianity by my understanding of it. And if I thought it would make a dime's worth of difference, I would shoot a note to Terry Gross and try to explain this to her. Because I think that Terry Gross probably knows about as much about Christianity as I know about Linear A. Right? Yeah. Robert in Australia writing in, no, not Noah's Ark again. Here in Australia, says Robert, some years back we had some guy doing the lecture circuit saying he had found Noah's Ark. What he presented was I know about this, Robert, and see, you and I are already giggling that we haven't gotten this out to the Horn family yet. Okay, you guys, everybody, if you're drinking something, set it down, swallow. If you're eating a chip or dinner, or, I'm sorry, Scott, Linda, are we past dinner? Okay. Swallow, take a breath. All right. Robert says, here in Australia some years back, we had some guy doing the lecture circuit saying he had found Noah's Ark. What he presented was a, quote, going to have a hard time with it. I'll get there in a minute. I'm going to take a deep breath and just try to run straight through it because I'm sitting here with my eyes watering. What he presented was a boat-shaped mud flow. The boat-shaped mud flow. I'm sure he was led to it by the grail-shaped beacon. Naughty zoot. See why I told you not to be drinking or eating anything? This is how monitors get ruined. Spit takes are hell. Oh, God. At the end of his lecture... You guys okay? Just shoot me a note. Say, I'm okay, Bob. I'm okay. At the end of his lecture, the presenter used the usual cop-out. If it's not Noah's Ark, then what is it? Wah, wah, wah. An expert on the topic of these formations was dragged from a lecture in Brisbane when he stood up and stated that the photo showed a typical mudflow formation of which there are hundreds in that area. Notice the dragged from a lecture part. Naturally enough, the majority of people interviewed on the way out by the news crews were all devout Christians who already believed. And almost a decade before our ABC's, Australian Broadcasting Commission, weekly science program did an episode on Noah's Ark, they had a believer who had a fax, of a photo taken of what was supposedly planks showing wood grain. You hear the quotation marks? Interestingly enough, the photo was taken at the side of one of the previously mentioned alleged boat-shaped mud flows. No, really, that is Elvis's face on the planet Mars. We're getting the rover to it just as quick as we can. Robert says, the show took him to the site. It was a mud flow. No sign of planks or wood grain. He still insisted it was true because he had a fax copy of a photograph of something that wasn't there when he stood on the site. Signed, Robert, P.S. The same show completely debunked intelligent design when that was pushed here by various religious groups. It's not science, so you cannot teach it as science in schools, was the conclusion. But see, the difference between there and here, Robert, is that Texas has quit asking. It's not like I didn't warn you. Sergi, subject line, sun-kissed spit take. Well, Bob, I learned my lesson about drinking sun-kissed while listening to your show. At least I wasn't eating a cheeseburger, or I'd really be in trouble. Writing from an orange-stained monitor, hold the mayonnaise, Sergi sun-kissed Sam Jerome Kyle. You people want... I don't just say things. I warned you. It's not every damn day that you get boat-shaped mud flow. Are you out there, Dr. John, or are you grading papers tonight, buddy? Because when Dr. John gets around to boat-shaped mud flow, I'll probably be able to hear the howling from here. Irish Dave writing, what is it? Well, maybe Noah's big old boat went out to sea since the tides come in and the tides go out. Oh, dear Lord. Boat-shaped mud flow. I have real respect for the people who try to deal intelligently with people who believe in boat-shaped mud flows. But by the same token, I also wonder if they're not engaged in a little bit of fool's errandry. Hey, good news. Good news. We are now $35 on the way to meeting Dr. Allen's challenge, whereby he triples magically without any boat-shaped mud flows, no magic at all. He triples $50 and turns it into $150. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Michael. So that leaves only $15 yet to do, and about 31 minutes to do it in. By Jove, we might just pull it off. No, there's so much out there. I mean, I'm sorry, we missed Titanic Tuesday. So we're kind of left playing catch up. Catch up? That's not catch up. That's the blood of Noah. Irish Dave, Bob, you are a lifesaver. I should have known better than to drink the Jim Jones Flavor Aid, but then I spat it out. Thanks, Bob. Peace be on your name. It's like, you know, a miracle. I've begun to think that I need to just go out and drive around in the night and see what's happening on the radio dial. Because I caught a few minutes of Savage. And I'll give you that he's crazier than a sprayed roach. But he's fun to listen to. If you like your crazy straight no chaser. Last night I caught a little bit of fulmination about, these Muslims, you know, they got these dietary laws. Now understand, Michael Savage's real name is Michael Wiener. Wiener is not an old Irish name.
It's not an old Indian name. Hint, he's Jewish. And I don't say that as a criticism. I'm just trying to make things... Because he was going off, these Muslims, they got their dietary laws that say that they can't eat pork because it's unclean. So I'm listening to the Jewish guy say this, and I'm going, yes, and? But see these Muslims, they got these laws that say that if they're going to eat some meat or something, like, you know, if they're going to eat a piece of chicken, that the chicken has to be killed and blessed and thanked by an imam, and it has to be properly killed or else it's not fit to be eaten because of these Muslim laws that they want to impose on the rest of us. And I'm thinking, and? Texas Betsy pointing out, Michael's proud of his Jewish practice. He does Torah study of some odd variety on Fridays. Oh, I gotta tune in. My Jewish right-wing neighbors listen. I bet he even keeps kosher. Which is precisely my point. Aren't there Jewish dietary laws about how one goes about killing a chicken? And did I miss the grandfathering in of barbecue? Because, you know, I might just sign right up if I can get around the pork thing. But so this Muslim man in Michigan, he finds out that his McDonald's chicken burger wasn't properly killed according to Muslim custom. And so he sues McDonald's in a class action and he gets us at $700,000. You know what I want to do? I want to take all the class action lawyers, you know how I feel, and I want to deport them to the bottom of the sea. And again, I'm just sitting here thinking, wait a minute. Does anybody who listens to this old draft dodger, I'm halfway to Prairie Home Companion. Does anybody who listens to this old draft dodger understand that the dietary laws between Muslims and Jews are very familiar, very similar? Guess not. So he was okay that the guy found out that, what's the word? Somebody help me, Muslim. Halal? He finds out that his chicken sandwich is not halal, or is haram, halal, I'm sorry. I should know these words. I apologize. But the guy finds out that it gets a judgment of some sort. And the savage wiener somehow thinks that his dietary rules that were given to him by his imaginary friend are somehow more valid than the dietary rules that were given to Muslims by their imaginary friend? Just trying to sort it out. Okay, let's not say imaginary. Let's say invisible. Invisible friend. Texas Betsy, oh, please. You know, I can hear her voice when I read, oh, please. We've talked, you know. Oh, please. Like there weren't a ton of Jews shocked that there's lard in the McDonald's French fries. Yes, and the word I'm looking for is halal. Thank you. Thank you, Betsy. Irish Dave pointing out, I like tacos. Can the savage wiener eat tacos?
Jim, Bob, go choke your chicken. No. That wouldn't be a proper way of to kill the chicken. Please, Jim, too much, he says.
Don't blame me.
Maybe I need to get satellite radio. Actually, later on, I used my smartphone to bring in a little bit of Rick Smith and bring in a little bit of Malloy. It just made the drive that much more enjoyable, last part of the ride down I-66 eastbound into D.C. Note coming in from our buddy Philip. He says, I have never allowed violent video games at home and reminded my daughters of this after Newtown. Then they sat down to watch 5 minutes on television drama shows and commercials for Sylvester Stallone's and Dolph Lundgren's new movies. Yeah, I saw the trailer for the new Stallone thing, and I'm thinking, maybe we should have delayed the release? I mean, what's the title? But that's me, not Philip. Philip says, I was so relieved that they were not being exposed to the intense violence of video games, which we all know cause mass murders, and instead were watching the socially redemptive violence of commercial television. Of course, if we had a strong macho leader like Leroy Jethro Gibbs, all of our problems would be solved in an hour, but real life keeps intruding so unpleasantly. As for Texas, when I lived in Texas, my daughter's history teacher informed me that my daughter and her fellow students were being taught a fair and balanced view of the Civil War. She bristled when I responded incredulously that in my Yankee-accented opinion, there are no fair and balanced options when one discusses slavery and secession. As for religion in Texas, within 2 days of reporting for work in Dallas, I was asked what my religion was. When I responded that I had been raised Catholic, my Christian supervisor blurted, Oh, Roman, huh? Well, hey, it was Texas, Philip. Be grateful he didn't call you a mackerel-snapping papist. Mackerel-snapper, huh? I was shocked, says Philip, because I've always been told that I look very Irish and had never previously been confused for a Roman or descendant of immigrants from any other part of Italy. Yeah, one of those Sabines, eh? I also recall co-workers inquiring whether Catholics were Christian. Oh, they were inquiring? They were willing to actually grant you that you might be? You were among the enlightened, Philip. I grew up where it was taken as read that a bunch of idolaters. No way you're Christian. You got to worship Christ to be a Christian, son. Can't be worshiping no Mary or Saint this or Saint that or some Pope. That ain't Christianity. Jesus is the head of the Christian church. Like the bridegroom unto the bride, hallelujah. You were among the liberals. Now, I could, says Philip, debate the issue for my own valid reasons, having been dressed in a white suit and white bucks at age 7 so we could celebrate my becoming a cannibal entitled to consume the body and blood of Jesus, but I could also raise the same questions about Baptists and so many other sects that passed for Christian in the nether regions below the Bible Belt. That's one to hang on to, the nether regions below the Bible Belt. Thank you, Philip. Royalty checks on the way. I was also asked whether Jews believed in Christ because my oldest daughter's father was Jewish. I responded that my Jewish friends didn't question the existence of a fellow Jew, but had profound reservations about whether he was the son of a God who oversaw his death. Bob, I love the food and varieties of music in Texas, and had many Latino and African-American friends, but having been raised as an ethnic in Boston, I was dumbfounded and frequently offended that many white Texans assumed that we had common views because of my skin color. Such identification ended abruptly when the inevitable invitation to attend the speaker's church drew my response of, thanks, but no thanks. And to the second inevitable question, oh, what church do you attend? My second response of, none. When my co-workers began praying for Jesus' help in better processing of personnel actions at the office's Thanksgiving dinner, I had to leave. I found it preposterous that anyone could read the Gospels and believe that Joseph's son had any skills in personnel functions of the civil service of the United States. Seriously, as I told my co-workers, were I religious, I would weigh solving the problem of the hungry and desolate against processing of personnel actions in a Texas federal office and opt for Ben Youssef focusing on the hungry and desolate, even if federal employment was a more secure line of work at the time. I admire folks like Texas Betsy and Edward for fighting the good fight and remaining in the Lone Star State. Oh, there's a bunch of them, Philip. There's a bunch of them. Sergi, that you just heard from. And Beth, who writes in now and then. And there's her buddy Diane. And Lord God, there's Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist. We don't hear so much from him anymore, but he's still out there. Oh, we got us some Texans, and I'm leaving some out, too. Because we got way more than that. And there's Cassie. I mean, she may be up at Princeton, but that don't make her a Jersey girl. All right? I mean, she's got about as much in common with, say, Snooki as a human being does with one of the plasma beings from Norblap 12. Yeah, Texas Betsy says, yeah, and not with those pink cowboy boots. But anyway, Phyllis says, I admire folks like Texas Betsy and Edward for fighting the good fight and remaining in the Lone Star State. There's a great deal to love about Texas, its beauty and its diverse peoples, among other things. However, I was represented by Richard Army, who will always be just Dick to me, Phil Graham, Kay Bailey Hutchison, and Sam Johnson, the representative who caused me to monetarily wonder whether Darwin, or momentarily, not monetarily, caused me to momentarily wonder whether Darwin may have been wrong that creatures evolve. So it was a considerable relief to see the Welcome to Texas sign in the rearview mirror when we left for Maryland. After Jim Hightower and Ann Richards lost their respective elections, I knew I was being bested by better forces than me, and I had to leave. When people ask me about living in Texas, I inform them that Texas is the U.S. Quebec. Oh, hell, Philip, now you're going to get me in trouble with the Quebecois. It is unique, a land apart, and in my mind, many of the white folks there spoke a very different language from me, and I'm trilingual. As for my co-workers, they stopped evangelizing when they discovered that I was studying Hebrew at the Jewish Community Center. I suppose they believed that even Benny Hinn couldn't redeem my lost soul. Be well. Signed, Philip. Wow. I do love the thoughtful emails we get here. Oh, since it is Wednesday, though, there's a couple of places we got to go, a couple of stories we got to finish off. It would not be fair, and I am nothing if not fair. It would not be fair to close this prayer meeting edition of the Horn without reference to some doings in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Now, it would be very easy for me to have a high old time with this story, but I don't want you to accuse me of making stuff up. This is from Gawker, but I followed all the links and it all fleshes out. Probably ought not use that word. Following news, Neetson Zimmerman wrote the story over at Gawker. It's filed under Holy Crap. You know that previous warning about swallowing? Whatever you're drinking, swallow it. Whatever you're chewing, swallow it. Just be patient. Following news that one of the former priests was arrested earlier this month for his alleged involvement in a cross-county meth ring. You heard that right. The Roman Catholic Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, released a statement expressing, quote, shock and concern, unquote, for the, quote, gifted, accomplished, and compassionate Monsignor. Monsignor in question would be Monsignor Kevin Wallen. He is known now to the Bridgeport, Connecticut community as Monsignor Meth. The diocese has been aware of Monsignor Kevin Wallen's personal problems since they started getting complaints, the diocese did, nearly 2 years ago from rectory personnel at St. Augustine Cathedral, that Wallen was, and this is not a joke, engaging in sex acts with odd-looking men while sometimes dressed as a woman. I'm taking the construction of this sentence to mean that Monsignor Meth was sometimes dressed as a woman. This is no criticism of gender difficulties or plain old-fashioned drag queenery. No. It is, as usual, about the hypocrisy. Wallen's arrest sent shockwaves through the Bridgeport and Danbury communities, where he was known as a charismatic speaker who was involved in many charitable activities and who enjoyed Broadway musicals and show tunes. He often attended musicals with his mentor, former New York Cardinal Edward Egan, and parishioners. Cardinals. I don't know. I think I prefer cardinals like Stan Musial. Bless his heart, never had a whiff of scandal about him. Had a lifetime batting average of .331. Played for 24 years in the major leagues, retired the year I was born. And my dad would regale me with stories of Stan the Man. He's got two statues outside the stadium in St. Louis. Outfield, first base, one of the most unorthodox batting stances ever to grace the batter's box. When he swung, it looked like something uncoiling. He was a student of the game. He was 92 when he went to his long home this past Saturday. I like cardinals like him a hell of a lot better than I do Cardinal Edward Egan taking in a few Broadway shows with Monsignor Meth. Monsignor Wallen, who was St. Augustine's pastor, you know, ordered penance and gave absolution and stuff like that. Yeah. Forgave other people's sins. What a racket. Was granted a sabbatical in July 2011 to seek a health assessment, but was suspended by the diocese in May 2012 after failing to show up for a follow-up examination. We haven't gotten to the good part. Still, he continued to receive a stipend from the diocese. Stipend, that means paycheck to you and me. Up until his January 3, 2013 arrest for possession and distribution of methamphetamine. The author of this story notes that the diocese stuck by Wallen even after he became the owner of a North Haven sex and smoke shop called Land of Oz and Dorothy's Place, shortly after leaving the priesthood. Statewide Narcotics Task Force, which worked with the Drug Enforcement Administration on the joint investigation that led to Wallen's arrest, believes the man nicknamed Monsignor Meth used his adult entertainment business to launder much of the $9,000 he was allegedly making in weekly meth sales.
Here's the punchline. St. Augustine parishioner Maria Spencer Fonseca told the Connecticut Post, "There is an evil invading our world, and it has come to our church. This was a work of evil, and I am praying for the Monsignor." Hey, Maria, you got any time to pray for maybe the kids or the young people who were doing the meth that the Monsignor sold them? You think you got any time to pray for them? Huh? Sugar, do you? Think you might have a few minutes to pray for the parents of the children who are on the meth, who never get a decent night's sleep because of the meth that the Monsignor sold them? You think you might have a minute to pray for them, Maria, honey? Then there's the diocese itself. It issued a statement and called for prayers for Monsignor Wallen, Monsignor Meth. They said, quote, "He has difficult days ahead for him." You ever met a tweaker? You ever met a person lost in the depths of methamphetamine addiction? Yeah, those are difficult days. Maybe going up and doing some federal hard time. That ain't difficult days. You got it? Yeah, I just wanted to share. Sure is nice that they're praying for the Monsignor, though, isn't it? Texas Betsy asks, "So, do Monsignors get sent to jail for 50 years like other meth dealers?" Well, it kind of depends on the judge, Betsy. Know what I mean? Kevin writing in from Colorado Springs. Subject line, Mary Irwin and me. "I've met Mary Irwin," oh dear, says Kevin, "and family, minus Jim, who had already died. Nice family, all of them, including Mary. One thing about her, though, troubled me, and it, if I can put it into words, was the gullibility factor." What did Bugs Bunny say? He is one of our resident philosophers. What a gullible! "Years ago," Kevin says, "before she got into the making money off sincere Christians who have no idea to her, she had invited a man named Bob Carnucci to speak at our church. He was selling his books and videos about supposedly finding the Ark on Mount Ararat." Wonder where she got the idea. "One problem," he said, "was that Turkey had forbade anyone from climbing the mountain, so he couldn't get back there to confirm his discovery." He said that the last time... Isn't that convenient? Turkey's been getting in the way of finding the Ark for a very long time. And that is a little surprising, because after all, Noah is revered as a prophet and patriarch by Islam, too. Wonder what the deal is. He said that the last time he climbed the mount, it was illegal then, but he hadn't been caught. Didn't want to go back and take a chance on getting caught, but he was sure. And he invited you to spend your money on his videos and books to prove it, that the Ark was there. And as an aside, I can tell you, I remember these stories when I was a little fundy. And it's like being told that maybe there really are dragons, or fill in the blank. It's thrilling to think about something like that. I mean, it grabs you. Until you develop higher faculties and you realize that you're, well, being invited this way to the egress for only a quarter. "A lot of people," Kevin says, "did spend their hard-earned money on the books and videos, but not me. The whole story sounded just a tad too convoluted and suspicious to me. He said that the Ark was surely there, and he had the grainy photos to prove it, plus one satellite photo of the mountain with what looked like an Ark on top, just like Noah left it. Can't wait to see what of Noah's parking, what no old Noah's parking ticket's up to now." So the circle has now repeated itself. Mary Irwin is now making the same rounds as Bob Carnucci is, trying to sell that Noah's Ark is there, just waiting to be discovered. "Sorry this email's so long. No need to apologize, Kevin. I'll finish very soon. But my question to Mary, Carnucci, and anyone else desperately trying to prove that it is this. So what if there really were, or if it isn't there? What does that Ark have to do with Christianity today?
Do the words of the brown-skinned Palestinian Jew include trying to desperately prove that a 6,000-year-old ark is on top of a forbidden mountain when they're hungry to feed, the near-naked to clothe, and prisoners in prison for whatever reason, guilty or not, to visit? I've got the feeling that the brown-skinned guy named Yeshua figured out that discoveries of whatever would take care of themselves, that there were more important things to do, like taking care of your fellow humans and giving them a hand up, not a punch in the face by telling them they're sinners going to hell. Well, Bob, that's my story of Mary Irwin and me and my gradual descent into not being so Christian, but rather trying to do what I can to make this world and life better for those who are more disabled than me, and for those people who are not disabled at all, but have had some downturns in life. If we're all trying to do that, then like the brown-skinned guy named Yeshua figured, other much less important things will take care of themselves. Signed, Kevin. Amen and amen. Philip says, come on, Bob, surely you recognize that the good prelate, Monsignor Meth, was merely wishing the community Godspeed, so to speak. Oh, Philip. When he manufactured meth and demonstrating his ecumenical empathy for Methodists. Whew. Oh! Methodists. As for his adult entertainment business, I appreciate his sagacity. From attending Catholic high school and college, I know of too many priests and brothers who foisted alleged adult entertainment on us young folks. I'm breaking my fingers now to spare you and my comrade Horden listeners. Lucky for you, you ran out of time. Irish Dave wants to know, when he parked the ark, did he display his handicapped permit? Wow. So, here endeth the lesson. Show tomorrow night. No show on Friday, remember. And I'll try to tweet or Facebook or email or whatever my schedule as it works out. But we will have a show tomorrow night. And I look forward to chatting with you. I look forward to your interaction back this way. And thanks, Thomas Jugapunch, for putting us over, finishing off Dr. Allen's challenge. It means a great, great deal. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. First and foremost, you, with the precious time you spend with all of us in this little community we've built. Thank you for your financial contributions. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, and Texas Betsy in the chat room. Sparky's also the moderator of the Horn Malloy Skype group on Friday nights, Saturday mornings, really, depending on where you are. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene, Susan, Agnes. Thanks to John Fox down in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Go to AICACT. Learn about the AICACT. And help us bring an end to the horrors of mountaintop removal. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Hey, here comes Rick Smith on the horn.